Welcome. My name is Kevin Scarbeck, and it's honored to be with everybody here today. Today is going to be the kickoff to the CAT plan, the deep dive option plan. My name is Kevin. Once again, I'm the STAC president, and we are excited to bring this to you guys today. I was going to talk a little bit about STAC, but considering there's 42 pages of a deck in front of you, and I don't think I have any time for that. So, but I did want to bring up that after this event, there'll be drinks and hors d'oeuvres in another room. So if you have any specific questions that just pertain to your business, they will be around to listen to that. So I'll just hand it over to Shelley, and thank you very much.
Great. Thank you so much. Welcome, everyone. So as Kevin said, we have a big deck to get through today. We've made, since our last in-person session, which was last December, we've finalized the specifications. There have been a number of changes in the CAT space. There have been a change in processor. The plan processor has changed. FINRA CAT is now the plan processor. I'm here, Shelley Bowling, representing FINRA CAT. I thought we would just go down the panel here and introduce who we have with us today before we start diving into the materials.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Lemie. I'm with SIBO Reg and work in the Reg Interps group there, too, if you have questions on the SIBO side.
I'm Judy McDonald from SIG, and I'm a member of the advisory committee, and I also work along with Shelley on the industry member tech spec working group.
Hi, I'm Max Turtelow from FINRA. I'm on the industry working group, but also represent FINRA SRO, not the FINRA CAT side like Shelley.
Thank you. All right, so just a quick recap of the agenda for today, what we're going to cover. We're going to talk about the most recent timeline. So some of the dates have changed since our last session, so we'll walk through what those are. We just, like I said, finalized the industry member tech spec that for the May to be go live implementation. So there have been some key changes that have been made to that spec. So we were going to just highlight some of the key changes there. Then really the meat of today, and I think what hopefully will be the most helpful and beneficial, is to walk through in depth some workflows and how the different reporting requirements apply or practically work when looking at common workflows. So we have quite a few of those to go through. We'll talk a little bit quickly about an update on the OSI symbology list, talk about registration, and then if we have time, which we may not because there's a lot to cover here, we were going to talk a little bit about the firm designated ID or the FDID, which is brand new for CAT. It's nothing like it exists in OATS. There is a deep dive webinar that's posted on CAT NMS. We did a fairly in-depth presentation earlier. So if we don't get to that particular topic, that information is out there. We can also, you know, have additional sessions or happy to take phone calls, but we'll get through as much of it as we can if time allows. All right, so let's go ahead then and just dive in on the implementation timeframes. So there are large firms and small firms in CAT, as I'm sure everyone is aware, that definition of a small firm is less than $500,000 in total capital. So if you have more than $500,000 in total capital, you're considered a large firm. And in the options space, all small firms go together, all large firms go together, and if anyone is in the equity space, there is this concept for small OATS reporters that are we're proposing to accelerate, but that doesn't apply in the options space. It's a clean-cut firms, large firms and small firms. So we'll talk to large firms. So the first key date here is when the industry test environment opens. So the test environment is essentially a prod equivalent environment. All the functionality that will be in production will be in the test environment, and that opens on December 16th of this year. So no one is required to be there on December 16th. It's voluntary at that point, but as we move closer to the production date in May, every firm will have to have successfully submitted data to test and proven that they are able to pass all of the validations, syntax semantic type validations, before they'll be given access to the production environment. So be aware that everyone will at least have to come in and do some amount of testing before they will be given access to production. So as we move through, what has changed here since when we spoke last is part of this is it's kind of twofold in how we have incrementally decided to roll out the validations. Before, everything was kind of coming together at once. But with FINRA CAT moving in, taking over as the processor itself needs the time to do the development work and get all the testing done that we need to do before we're able to start rolling it out to the industry. So part of it is because of that. But also a lot of the feedback we've received, a lot of these validations, particularly the inter-firm linkages where firms have to pass order IDs, and if it doesn't link, correct and repair these things. This is new for it, particularly in the options space. So trying to give firms more time to get the records right to begin with on the validation side before you start layering on more complex validations. So that's part of the thinking in this incremental approach and how we're going to roll it out. So the first rollout will be based just on the basic data integrity validations. So things like syntax semantics, you know, do you have numbers or sub numbers and all the fields are populated and things like that. So that will be the first production date for that is May 18th of 2020. And what that means is starting May 18th, 2020 for all 2B reportable scope, all data every day has to be reported and it has to be in by 8 a.m. on T+1, and any rejections that occur have to be corrected and resubmitted by 8 a.m. on T+3. And that is all regulatory requirements apply at that time for those types of validations. So there's no conformance period or anything like that that we had looked at previously. And the FDID will have to be there beginning May 18th, 2020. Eastern time, yes. All the times are Eastern. So then the next thing that happens is we will roll out intra-firm linkage validations. So you have new orders, you have routes, you have child events, different kinds of events that are occurring inside a single firm. And all of those linkage validations will be turned on in the test environment beginning in April of 2020. So firms can start testing then. That's even before the data integrity validations occur. But that's when you can start testing how well you're doing on linking inside your own firm. And then those requirements, intra-firm linkages requirements, will go into production in August of 2020. And as we're getting out a little bit further on these dates, they're more than a year out. We don't have the specific calendar date yet, so that's why you'll see some of these are just months and years. So when we get a little bit closer, we'll be announcing the specific calendar date in those months. Once we move through and get the intra-firm linkages turned on, then we'll turn on inter-firm linkages, so firm to firm. So firm A sends an order to firm B. The route has to link to the related new order. If it doesn't link, those things have to be repaired. So that will be enabled in the test environment in July. So, and the way that the test environment will work, I said, it's essentially a prod equivalent. So if both firms come in, the linkage will be attempted. So if you want to test with a particular counterparty, you can coordinate that. If you're both in, the test environment will link. We are going to be talking about coordinated industry-wide testing and we're going to be working with the industry groups and Judy and industry member tech spec working group and trying to formulate industry-wide test plans, but those haven't been completely worked out just yet, but they're definitely will be very important. And so then those firm-to-firm linkages will be turned on in production in December of 2020, meaning that we will then link all interfirm. Any unlinks will have to be repaired and corrected by 8 a.m. on T+3. And then the last tranche of this is the linkage to the exchanges. So when you route an order to an exchange, your CAT route report will have to link to the related order in the applicable exchange. And if it doesn't link, it'll be an error that will have to be corrected. So that will go into the test environment in September of 2020. All the exchange data will be there every day. The exchanges are already reporting to CAT, so starting in September, you can test linkage against any exchange. All the data will be there. And then that will be turned on in production in December as well, along with InterFirm, and any errors will have to be corrected by T+3. So any questions on how we're incrementally rolling that out? Okay. And then the next slide here is focused on the small firm implementation dates. And hopefully this is a little bit more straightforward. There's essentially a single implementation date for the small firms, and that's December 2021. So they get essentially an extra year to, and some things a little bit more than that, to have get their development and everything in place. So December 2021 in the production environment. It will be the test dates, small firms, in the test environment, there's no difference between a small firm and a large firm in terms of how validations and things go. So if you want, if a small firm wants to come in and test, the production environment is there. The test environment is there and you can test. All right, and then 2D, which is the more, we'll get into the scope in just a little bit more depth here in the next few slides, but the 2D scope will be in December 2021. And then customer and account, which will be a lot of additional future conversations, but that isn't until July 2022. All right. So what we're going to, the next set of slides here, we just wanted to refresh everyone's memory on what the scope definitions for 2B is. So, of course, we're focused today on 2B and what needs to be done for that. So essentially, at a high level, 2B is simple electronic orders. And what does that mean? It would seem, as we've had these conversations before, pretty straightforward, but there's always the complexities which we're going to see illustrated here today. We've seen illustrated in our previous sessions. But just as a refresher, what we've done is we have tried to very narrowly define and make it very clear when we're talking about an electronic order what that means. And essentially, there's kind of a twofold test here. It's an electronic receipt of an order that's defined as the initial, and this is very important, the initial receipt of the order in electronic form, standard format, directly into an OMS or EMS. So if you're getting it on a paper ticket, we'll talk through some of these flows and entering it. It's still received manually. So this is, it has to go directly into an OMS or EMS. And for a route to be electronic, it has to be going directly out of one of those systems into, in standard format, to an exchange or another industry member. And then this, the second part of the definition is that, and if we go on to the next slide, paired orders are not in until 2D. And so we just wanted to make sure it was clear what is meant by an electronic paired order that it contains both the buy and sell side that is sent to another member for crossing or price improvement. So hopefully that helps narrow down, and we'll walk through a lot of examples of what that looks like. Okay, so moving on, just wanted to highlight a few of the changes we've made, some of them to the specifications themselves that came out of a lot of industry feedback and discussion over the past months. There were In the original versions of the spec, there was an origin code on most of the events, and there was a lot of discussion around how that related to the exchange origin codes, mappings, as the orders flowed through. And as we really got into the analysis and looking, and additionally, how it relates to some of the equity reporting requirements, and eventually you'll have the cross-product orders. What we have done is we have eliminated the origin code from everything except for routes to an exchange. We'll talk about that in just a second. But we removed that. There was also this originator that was on new events. We eliminated that. And instead, what we have is an account holder type. And this is also on the equity events, too. And this is on the new order only that you get from a customer or a foreign BD, so not from another U.S. broker-dealer. And this, you can see the values here. This will indicate whether your customer is institutional, retail, if it's an employee account, if it is a firm account, whether that's a market-making account or some other account, and then it designate if it's foreign or not. Then we've also added an affiliate flag that will allow CAT to understand whether an order was received from an affiliate or not. And that was kind of embedded in some of those other codes, but hopefully this is a more straightforward way to lay it out. And then if we move on to the next slide, as I just mentioned, the exchange origin code, there was a lot of conversation about that and the validation going into an exchange and making sure the mappings were all there and current. And essentially where we are right now is that the exchange origin code is only required on a route to an exchange. It is a text field that will not be validated by CAT against known values in exchanges. It should be the exact value you transmit to the exchange. But to try to reduce the amount of potential rejections and things like that, because we're getting the information from the exchange itself. So when we pick up the exchange's data, the exchange origin code is there. So this is just a way to communicate what you actually transmitted, but it's not going to be validated. And then, as we'll get into, as we start working through the workflows here, on the there's this prior and next unlinked field concept, and we've added that to a supplement event that, in case you don't know at the time that you generate a new order or route what this next unlinked is, this supplement event will let you come in and do that later. All right, so let's get into the real meat of this, and we're hopefully things start to make more sense. And I'm going to turn it over to Jennifer to start us off on the workflows.
Thanks, Shelly. Sorry, I hope you can hear it. Thanks, Shelly. So now we are on slide 10, if you're walking along in the presentations on the workflows. What we show here are some of the workflows that are included in 2B, hopefully just to illustrate it and give you a picture of it a little better. The examples are of sending an order from a broker-dealer directly to an exchange, a non-BD customer sending an order to a BD onto an exchange, and these are all transmitted electronically in the required order formats. And then the third example here on this slide are a broker-dealer transmitting an order to another broker-dealer who then transmits it onto an exchange. If you turn on to the next slide, there are some more examples of the scenarios of the reportable events. There's one with a non-BD customer sending an order electronically to another broker-dealer who sends it to another BD onto an exchange. And then the fifth example below is a non-BD sending it to a broker-dealer who then sends it on to a second broker-dealer and on to another broker-dealer onto an exchange. So this is just intended to illustrate those scenarios where you're passing things on electronically among the groups. If you go to the next slide, which is on the unlinked events, Shelly mentioned before, with unlinked events, when we have scenarios where things are partially done manually or something that's not part of phase 2B, you might have an unlinked event. So if you have a manual order event, a complex order, because an options complex order is not included in phase 2B, it's in a later phase 2D, although if you have a stock option order, the stock leg is included in phase 2A on the stock side. But generally, complex orders are not part of phase 2B, so that might be another unlinked event. And then the third one are paired orders. So if you have like an auction order where you have the buy side and the sell side paired in to come into an exchange, they are not like on CBOE, it would be like an AIM or a SAM auction, an automated improvement mechanism or solicitation auction mechanism auction. Those are not part of the first phase. They're later. So these are events, since they're not included in the phase, you might have something in the life cycle of an order that's missing or unlinked. So since there are these unlinked events with 2B, we have these codes that are introduced into fields where you have a prior unlinked event and a next unlinked event. So if you receive, for example, you receive something manually and then you electronically route it to the exchange, the manual receipt of the order is not included in phase 2B, so you would put something in the prior unlinked field to denote that event, that it was a manual event. Same could happen downstream if you're routing onto an exchange. When you do the route, if you do it via phone, the manual route to the phone then wouldn't be part of, or sorry, manual route via phone to the exchange would not be reported in 2B, so you would indicate that the next unlinked event is manual. So we'll get into some of those scenarios here later. One thing that's noted on this slide here, just to sort of emphasize, is that, two things actually. Shelley mentioned before there's now a supplemental option where if you don't know the information at the time you're going to transmit an order outbound, that you don't know that what the event is, you can add it in later. If you don't know that it's going to be an unlinked event, you can add that information in later now. And then secondly, the manual events, they're not required in phase 2B, but a firm can choose to start reporting early. If you do have the information already all automated and you're able to report it early, you can do that. The requirement, though, is if you start, you need to report it all. All the information needs to be included and timely reported, and the whole chain of events has to be in sequence. So you can do it early. It's just once you do it, you need to be sure to include all the information.
Is that for manual orders only, or is that for reported
to the response? Yeah, it's For manual, we won't have all the 2D functionality in the 2B timeframe.
Did you
decide to call
early to your destination, but
you
bought it through, it's not reporting yet, that is on the problem,
right? No, you would be, the where you sent it would be presumably receiving it manually as well. Go ahead.
So that's really the whole point of this prior unlinked and next unlinked. So you only have to know what you're doing. You're receiving manually or electronically, and you're sending manually or electronically. And because each reporter says that in the case of a, you know, manual order, if, let's say, the case where you are sending an order manually and you choose not to report it, but you will say the next unlinked is manual. If you're sending it, let's say, to a broker dealer who chooses voluntarily to report that same manual order in 2B, which is early, he'll report it. He doesn't have to then report any the prior or next unlinked. But because FINRA CAT knows not to try to link those messages together because you've indicated the next unlinked is manual, it all works. And that's the whole motivation behind these prior and next unlinked indicators. It breaks that dependency between the reporters.
Yep, exactly.
If we turn on to the next slide, which is slide, 13, the unlinked, this actually sets out what the unlinked events are in the codes. So for the next unlinked, there are four choices. There's an M for the next is manual, C for complex orders, P is for a paired, and then the blank would be if it's a not applicable. So it's really not a fourth choice, but if you leave a blank, it's not applicable. And then for the prior linked, there are the choices of either manual, complex order, or it's blank because it's not applicable and you have the information. So those are what the codes are. Hopefully that is pretty easy just to understand the codes. The illustrations that we have later in the slides will help demonstrate a little more for you, too. And with that, I will turn it over to Judy.
Thank you. So we'll step through a lot of different scenarios, and I think the important point here is to really try to tease out the difference between manual and electronic, and you'll see how we're emphasizing that. So we can refer back to the definition that Shelley presented to us. The long and short of it, essentially, if you receive electronically via an API, it's reportable. And if that's not the case, it's not reportable. And if it's not reportable, you can early choose to report it. If you don't choose to report it, you need to use the flag so that you don't have that disconnect when the plan processor tries to link. So we're going to go through a number of different scenarios just to emphasize what's being considered reportable or not, or manual or electronic. So our first slide on page 14 is a non-BD customer phones or IMs an order into a broker-dealer. So it's important, that distinction is important. If it's instant message, that is not considered an electronic communication of the order because it's not via a standard format. So then the broker-dealer records this on a paper ticket, turns around and enters it into his EMS system, and then routes it on to SIBO. So in this case, the only thing that's mandatorily reported into B is that route event to the SIBO. And so you can see where the distinction is drawn there, even though an EMS is used. So we'll go to the next slide, slide 15. So this is, again, trying to tease out the difference between manual and electronic. So again, we have a phone order or an IM. The broker-dealer actually turns around and types this into his order capture system, and we can see that there's even a timestamp. But because he's typing it in and he did not electronically receive it, that is not reportable in 2B. When that's electronically sent to the SIBO, then that order route event is reportable. Now we'll go to the next slide, slide 16. So then here's just another play on that. So if a broker-dealer receives an electronic order, that, of course, is reportable as an order accept. But then he calls the order down to a floor broker. Again, that's manual. It's not reportable. But he does have to provide that next unlinked indicator. The next slide, slide 17. Here we'll build on the complexity a little bit here. So we have a mix of a phone, so the non-BD customer phones an order in, and it's a single order, and that's chased with a fixed message. It's important here to state that because the order was initially received verbally, that's out of scope for 2B. When the broker-dealer then routes that electronically to the SIBO, the order route event is reportable. And again, that needs the prior unlinked indicator to be set. We'll go to the next slide, slide 18. So here we're emphasizing that even when you have a mix of manual and electronic within a broker-dealer, so the same rules apply. So a broker-dealer in this case has received an electronic order, but then verbally communicates it to its position desk. So in this case, the new option order is reportable. You do have to tag it as next link unlinked as manual. And then when the position desk routes it out, only the route is reportable in this case. Again, you have to tag that as being the prior unlinked being manual. We'll go to slide 19, and so we're again building up a couple different broker dealers in a chain of order processing. So a non-customer sends an order electronically to a broker dealer, and then he sends it on electronically to a second broker dealer who then calls the order down to the floor. So the early part of this is straightforward. Of course, the phone call of the order to the floor broker is not reportable. But he does have to, with that order accepted event, BD2, with the order accepted event, has to tag that was the next unlinked being manual. And then the second row here is a very similar example. It's just it is treated manually earlier in the workflow. You sort of predict how that plays out. I'll go now to slide 20. So now we'll start talking. Oh, sorry, Max. Okay. Stealing your thunder.
No, thank you. Please, go ahead. So we've walked through one of the reasons why you can have an unlinked order. So I'm going to walk through the next two reasons why you have an unlinked order. So in slide 20, this demonstrates that a non-BD customer submitted a complex order in one four-leg package to a broker-dealer. That broker-dealer will then, in this case, breaks up the order into four single legs, and those four single legs are sent electronically to the exchange. So in this case, you would not need to report the complex order, the receipt of the complex order, but you would need to report the four single legs because they were broken up into four individual legs. You would report those with an unlinked prior with an indicator of C, noting that it came from a complex order. The next slide, slide 20, again, sort of building on the last example and some of the earlier examples we saw, really the same scenario. So a non-BD customer submits a complex order to BD1. BD1 then breaks that up into four single electronic orders, submits that on to BD2, who then continues to submit those single-leg electronic orders to the exchange. All of the electronic single-leg orders would need to be reported. The middle legs, the one from BD1, would be reported with an unlinked prior of complex because it came from a complex order, and obviously the linkages would continue through there. In the next slide, we come to the last reason we have for unlinked orders, and that's paired orders. So here you have a non-BD customer submits a single electronic order that would be reportable under 2B because it's a simple electronic order that's received by the BD. Then some solicitation process goes on and a paired order is sent to the exchange. Because that paired order is out of scope for 2B, while the single receipt of the order is reportable, it'll be reportable with an unlinked, next unlinked indicator of P for paired order. And then 23, we have, in slide 23, we have a combination of handling it partially electronically as well as partially through the paired order process. So a non-BD customer receives a single electronic order, and then the BD goes through a solicitation process, but only receives partial solicitation, and that order is now partially sent electronically to the exchange where it receives an execution, and then the remainder of it is sent as part of a paired order package to an exchange. So in 2B, in scope here, the simple electronic order receipt would be reported, and the second route that's electronically execution would also be reported here. In the next slide, we go through really what the expectations are here, and I know we've discussed this a few times already, but complex orders are not required to be reported in 2B, and I think from the CAT processor standpoint, they would request that you not report them. But if there's an inability to suppress them, they must be populated with this handling instruction of complex, so the CAT processor can deal with them appropriately. And with that, I will turn it back to Jennifer.
Thanks, Max. So now we're on slide 25, which is an illustration of the complex order scenarios. In this one, you see that the non-customer has verbally provided a complex order to the broker-dealer, and in addition, they're sending four fixed messages. It could be that their system doesn't accommodate covering complex orders, but that's how the complex order is delivered to the BD. And then the BD from there then routes a single complex order onto an exchange. From this phase of it, there's no reporting requirement at all in 2B. From the original order was a complex order, so it's not required to be reported, even though that it came in piece, you know, four different legs. The order to the exchange isn't required at all either because, again, complex orders are excluded. As we mentioned earlier, you can, with the preferences that you suppress and not report anything on the complex order in 2B, but if you do voluntarily report the legs, you would report four new orders for the four legs, and you have to include the instruction, the CMPX, as well as a next unlinked flag of C. And then the next slide on here is just another illustration related to complex orders as well. And this one, the non-customer uses a fixed version where they send simple orders to the broker, and the broker somehow has standing instructions or other information to denote for them that it is intended to be represented as a complex order. So the broker receives those individual orders electronically, but the instruction is, and it is intended to be a complex order, and then the broker then routes on a complex order to the exchanges. This is the same as the last. Nothing is reportable because it was initially intended to be a complex order when received. Those weren't three simple orders sent into the broker. So nothing would be reported either on the receipt or the send if you do voluntarily the receipt of the order by the BD and the send to the exchange. And if you do voluntarily report, again, those three orders would have to have the instruction of CPX and a next unlinked of C. Any questions on that? Okay, we can go on then to the next slide, which is slide 27, just one more variation on how the flow can work. Here, the customer sends an electronic complex order to the BD, so they've got the messaging all down that it's one electronic complex order sent on to the BD. The BD then provides a phone order to another BD where they verbally transmit the complex order to another BD, and then they have four six messages they send on to the second BD, and then finally the second BD routes a single complex order onto the exchange. In this scenario, everything is electronic. Nothing is required to be reported, though, even though it's all already systematized, and it's because complex orders are excluded and also because the original order was intended to be a complex order. It wasn't sent in legs or anything like that. So, again, we prefer you not report anything. If you do choose to report, for the BD1, the optional reporting, they would be... you would report each individual leg of the complex order that you received, even though you received it in a single message. You report each individual leg with the complex instruction and the prior unlinked of C. And then this one here, you'd add a next unlinked of C, too, because you're sending it on as a complex onto another broker-dealer involved. And then for BD2, if they choose to voluntarily report as well, they would do the same thing where they report the legs and include the CPMX instruction, and they would have a prior unlinked of C and a next unlinked of C as well because it's a complex order both ways. Any questions?
So in this situation, if there was an equity leg, complex with equity, supposedly that equity leg is reportable, but you don't have a price, you don't have any information on that because it's all part of the spread the entire way.
Mm-hmm.
What are you supposed to do?
You still report the equity leg. Your price information would be, is it blank? Is that what it is? Or do you just put a net? Because you don't know. I appreciate what you're saying. The net price of it has something, or it might be market if it doesn't have a price individually associated with it. So you would not have a price in the field because you don't have.
There's a handling instruction, I think it's OPT on the equity leg that, and it could maybe a market. We can look in and how it's laid out and what you're supposed to do with the price, but it definitely has the special handling code that allows the equity leg to be identified as such.
This next one, again, on slide, now we're on slide 27. Just again, one more scenario illustrating it here. The customer sends a complex order to the BD. Did we actually go through this one already? I felt like we did. Yeah, sorry, yes. Wrong slide. I'm like, we did just go through this one. Sorry about that. We're on slide 28 now. This one's a complex order with option legs only, sent electronically as single orders but with instructions to complete as complex. Again, very similar to the other slides here. A single complex order is sent by a customer to a BD who then sends on three orders onto, actually, I feel like we did this one too. Did we do this one already? I think we already, did we already walk through this too? I feel like we did, but I'll walk through it again just to make sure. Yeah, it's very similar. And so with this one, just to walk through it, a single complex order is sent by a non-customer to BD1, and then the BD sends three different orders on to BD2 through fixed messages, and there's handling instructions that are known that it is a complex order, even though they're sent as three separate messages from BD1 to BD2. BD2 then combines them and has a simple single complex order that they send on to an exchange. For all of this whole life cycle here, there's nothing required to be reported in 2B because they're related to complex orders. However, and that is the preference that you not report anything. However, you can still voluntarily report if you choose to, and if you do, for the first BD, again, they would report each leg of the complex order received from the customer with this CPMX handling instruction, and they'd use a prior unlinked to C and a next unlinked indicator of C. And then also, again, with BD2, if they voluntarily report, they would report each of the legs as accepted with the same indicator, the CMPX, and using the prior unlinked indicator of C and the next unlinked of C as well. Any questions on that? I'm looped in because I feel like I've went through the same slide three times. They're all very similar, but yeah.
You are.
Sorry for that. Yeah. Okay. So then now let's go on next to then combined orders. So for combined orders, this is where you have multiple orders from customers that you combined into a single order and process it from there. These would be subject to any exchange rules that permit you to combine orders, but subject to those rules, where a firm ends up combining simple orders from customers before they route it on to an exchange as a single simple order, those do need to be reported in Phase 2B. In those scenarios, the firm has to report both the combined order and the individual orders that made up, that are part of the combined order. It's actually not just when you're out to an exchange, but also when you're out to another industry member who's in the chain. So with the Phase 2B, what you need to do, the combined order that is to be reported has to have the representative ID of 0 indicated in the options combined order. And then for each of the individual orders, an order for order fulfillment report is required to be reported with a fulfillment link type of 0, and that indicates that there's an order for, an options order for fulfillment. And then the linkages between the individual customer orders and the combined orders is not going to be required until 2D. And then any portions of those orders that involve complex orders are not reportable until 2D. We do have a scenario on here on the next slide for this. Here, the broker-dealer receives three separate simple orders from three separate customers, and they then decide to route in a single combined order to the exchange. So there would be new option order events for each of the single customers, and then new option order events for the combined order that's created that is sent to the exchange that represents the individual orders. And for that one, you'd put the representative indicator of O and the new linkage requirement. There would be no linkage requirement until 2D. The option order route for the combined order, the option order fulfillment events for each of the legs wouldn't be until 2D. Well, sorry, I'm getting it twisted.
Yeah, no, it's so in 2B,
sorry. In 2B, the combined order is a new order and then a separate route to the exchange, and that new order would have the, it's called a rep order indicator, would be that O to show that that's the combined order, but it would not have to have, if you're familiar with the spec on a representative order, you have to put the aggregated order IDs of each of the orders that comprise that. You don't have to put the aggregated order IDs in 2B, you just have to put the representative indicator. And then on the, and this gets a little bit tricky, we can figure out how to lay this out a little bit better. The simple, each of the individual customer orders have a new order and then an order fulfillment, and that fulfillment flag, fulfillment link type, has to be O and 2B, but the related order ID of the rep order isn't required till 2D. So individually, you can tell there was this combined order and there are underlying orders, but you're not identifying which underlying orders they were until 2D. And then on a fulfillment, you'll see that this order got filled because of a combined order, but you don't have the combined order ID yet until 2D. Hopefully that makes sense. So you're identifying what it is in 2B, but you're not putting all the linkages and the puzzle pieces together until 2D. Does that make
sense? Yeah, thanks for saving me. Yeah. did everyone follow that? I apologize that I'm dropping the ball on it.
No. There's a scenarios document that goes along with the tech spec. It's the technical scenarios document. There is a scenario in that document as well that lays it out. And I just checked on the equity leg. There's a scenario in there on the equity leg with the OPT. If you want to check that out, it shows how to populate it.
I read through those today. I didn't see that one.
It's on page, I just looked at it. It was like page 170. Well, see me afterwards. I can get you to the right place.
And if needed to, like on the combined order event, we could probably help if folks want to work through some scenarios with that too. I know this doesn't happen very often necessarily on the option side, but I know one example, like on the SIBO side, that comes up is when you do QCC trades on the exchange, where you are crossing a customer order. It's actually a stock option order. We have all this combined together for you. The original side has to be one party, but the contra side interest can be multiple. But when you submit it to the exchange, you have to combine the order in. So that might be a really good case example to look over, is how you report a QCC transaction into, because it would have both the stock leg component and the combined order part to it potentially as well.
Okay, so I'll pick up with the options wholesaler scenarios. Now, we pulled all these slides together, so if you're not option wholesaler, you can focus on this this section. We've covered most of these already, so I'll use this time mostly to just check and see if there's any questions from the audience on any of these various workflows. Jennifer's already done the heavy lifting on the presentation here. So the first, first workflow on slide 32 is a very basic workflow, no surprises, completely electronic, just illustrating the role of the options wholesaler, BD2 in this case. And then if we go to slide number 33, we again illustrate the transitions between electronic and manual. And these are the same as what we talked about, similar examples as to what we talked about earlier. Are there, I will pause here though, are there any questions on these, the manual electronic mix here? Okay. And then slide 34, this is, again, Jennifer did the heavy lifting on this. If we focus in on BD2 and this combination of both verbal and a complex order, and what can optionally be reported here is laid out on this slide. Are there any questions on this one? Okay. And then we'll go to slide 35, which is, again, very similar, but is answering that question if you're in receipt of these multiple simple option orders in an older version of FIX with an embedded handling instruction, you're going to treat that the same as a complex order. And again, it does not need to be reported. If you have difficulty in suppressing those FIX messages for reporting, there is this optional path for you to take and report on each and every one of those fixed messages. We'll go to the next slide, slide 36. And so here is a solicitation example. So we start with an electronic order. BD1 sends that to a wholesaler. BD2 then solicits that order out, and it gets a positive response from BD3. I want to emphasize here that this whole solicitation workflow, as Max went over, is not reportable, but sort of need to stay tuned for the scope in 2D because we're still having discussions about exactly what will be reportable in 2D in this workflow. And then in this case, a paired order is sent to the SIBO, but that also is not reportable. And so this just takes it through the two broker-dealer hops. Any questions on that one?
What does BD3 have to report?
So in phase 2B, nothing, and that's important. In phase 2D, that is still under heated discussion.
That's correct.
So, and I do understand the idea behind not requiring reporting for the solicitation workflows was to try to make it easier for everybody. It does, in fact, require someone responding to a solicitation. You do have to suppress those responses. Any other questions? Okay. Max?
Thank you. So the last couple slides on the scenarios are going to cover the couple additional 2B scenarios just to make sure we didn't omit anything. So the first one we have on slide 38 is post and facilitate. So this really tries to cover a similar ground or similar concept as the paired order, but instead of sending in both the buy and sell as a paired package, after receiving an order electronically, BD1 sends that order electronically to the exchange. They wait the required time frame and then sends their contra interest also electronically to the exchange. Because this is not sent in as one paired package, all three of these legs here would need to be reported under 2B, the receipt of the order electronically as well as the submission of two orders, the buy and sell side, electronically to the exchange. The next slide, slide 39, here we're looking at an auction and particularly the auction response. So we have an order is sent electronically to the exchange, an auction occurs, and market makers or other market participants respond to that auction. There is an FAQ on this, but we wanted to make sure we had the slide here to go over that auction responses, they do have to be reported, and they need to be reported with the handling instruction of auction response, as well as including the auction ID in the name value pair, because they're electronically submitted as single legs to the exchange. And with that, we are done with the exceptions or the overview. We'll send it back to Shelley.
Great. Thank you. Thanks, guys. I know that was a lot to get through. If there are other workflows that we haven't covered here that people would like to present to us, please definitely call the help desk, send an email so that we can try to address those and work through them, make sure we can get them eventually incorporated in the scenarios document. So just let us know if there's something that we have missed. All right, so a couple other quick things we wanted to just bring everyone's attention to. We've gotten a lot of questions on when we'll be publishing the OSI symbology list, so all of this has to be reported using OSI symbology. And we have been requested to publish a daily list for firms to use, so we are going to do that. We are still in development, exploring what the timing for that looks like every day and the details of it. But we plan to have that a sample list at a minimum published by July 15th so people will know what it looks like every day and then get more information about timing and things like that. We do publish an equity list. We will be publishing an equity list every day as well. So
hypothetically, what if you create a symbol and it's not on your list? What happens then? like there's been a name change, a buyout, something like Don Vanilla, and it's just, it didn't make your list somehow. And I still want to be tag-along with it. It's not okay, and then you buy it.
Yeah, there will definitely be, we know we have to handle intraday changes. So that will be part of the process. So you're saying something outside of an intraday change scenario.
Well, intraday could count. What if you miss something? I mean, presumably OSI, I mean, the whole team for OSI is their self-derivable symbol. So you shouldn't need the left team symbol. But what if we submit a symbol you don't have? Is it going to reject? I mean, it's still a good symbol. What's the
result? Yeah, we'll take that back. I'm not sure if anyone here is familiar with the kinds of scenarios where it wouldn't be on that list. Oh, yes.
So, isn't it that the, you're actually getting the list from
the... Yes, yes.
So I think what might happen is you'll have something that's reportable that's not on there, that should be the next day, and you've got your mm-hmm. people.
Unless it's something that would never hit the OCC's list, is that what you're...
No, it's more like OCC is behind.
Right,
now,
yes.
We're going to submit it. Are you
okay.
going to reject it?
So part of our analysis and development and why it's, taking so long is we know we have to handle those kinds of situations.
I just want
so,
to make sure we're
yes.
not going to have to reject something.
Right.
Do a fake correction.
Right. No, there would probably be a warning type of a scenario that wouldn't be a hard rejection that would resolve itself automatically, essentially, when the updated list comes. We deal with this in equity. You don't have to deal with it in equities as well. So unless it's something outside of that construct, which if there is, please, you know. That is, yeah.
We won't know till it happens.
Well, this is very true. All right. So then the next big thing, before we run out of time, just doing a time check here, I think we only have 1 minute left, right, where we have a hard stop at, not 5:30, that's Eastern time, 4:30. So we'll save the FDID topics for later. Again, check out our detailed presentation on CAT and MS for firm-designated ID, and we can certainly do follow-up sessions or one-on-one. Please don't hesitate to call the help desk. We're happy to speak individually with firms to walk through in as much detail as anyone would like on that topic. But a very important reminder before we close is that all firms, and this is even the small firms that aren't scheduled until later dates, must register by June 27th. So that the plan participant and the processor knows who the firms are and can start, you know, working with firms and understand who to look for and when. So it's very important. If someone is not registered by June 27th, we will we'll be doing a proactive kind of call-out exercise, working with each of the SROs, with their particular members. So basically come track you down if you don't register by June 27th. So right now we're expecting about 1,700 firms and we're only at about 380. So we have quite a ways to go. So if you're a clearing firm or you're a service provider, you might want to remind your clearing, your correspondents, you know, any kind of plug you could put out there. But we're going to be starting in June really focusing hard on getting those numbers up because they're not where they need to be. Call the help desk, and they can walk you through how to update the form. All right, so don't want to go over. We will be here afterwards. I think over in this general, or I'll let Kevin,
yes.
If Kevin wants to wrap up
thank
there.
Thank you very much for everyone in attendance. Thank you to the presenters for the hour instruction. And we'll have food and drink in the kitchen, well, the bar area of the corner. And they'll be around to handle any questions more specifically. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks for hosting us. Thank you to everyone on the phone.